So when I'm on mountain roads, it's usually for leisure or tourist purposes. And I would say that hopefully there's no professional stress involved. In other words, I can generally drive in a more relaxed manner. That's a basic assumption of mine.
That's what the director of the OAMTC says, engineer Oliver Schmerold. With 2 million members, the UAMTC is the largest automobile and touring club in Austria and the seventh largest in the world. I met Oliver Schmerold to talk to him about driving safety and the future of mobility. And with that saying, welcome to the Glockner Gipfel, the podcast of Großglockner Hochalpenstraßen AG. My name is Max Kugel, and I would like to take you on this exciting journey and wish you lots of fun with Austria's highest view.
So hello, Mr. Oliver Schmerold. Welcome to the Glockner Gipfel.
Yes, thank you very much for the invitation.
You're very welcome. Today we have decided to talk about driving safety and the future of mobility. Perhaps that's why we're starting off. What would you say constitutes safe driving, or how would you define it?
I would definitely classify safe driving as conscious driving. In other words, driving where the focus is really on steering the vehicle and not on checking emails or reading the newspaper or other activities, but really consciously driving actively and driving with foresight, with the right seating position, with the right positioning of the rear view mirrors, and generally speaking, the safety of the whole vehicle. So do I have the right tires? Do I have the right tire pressure? Am I properly concentrated or well rested? So all these elements are part of it. Driving a car or even riding a motorcycle is an activity that requires your full attention.
Would you say that this is particularly important on mountain or panoramic roads, such as the Großglocknerstraße, perhaps in a different way or with even more attention, so to speak?
Well, when I'm driving on mountain roads, it's mostly for leisure or tourist purposes, so hopefully there's no professional stress involved, which means I can generally drive more relaxed. That's a basic assumption of mine. And then, of course, especially on panoramic roads, you should also enjoy the panorama, which means there is a certain amount of distraction from side views, of course. But that only means that I have to adjust my speed accordingly, that I can still plan for the half-second longer reaction distance or time.
This brings me to my next question, namely whether safe driving is compatible with pleasure driving or whether they are mutually exclusive.
Safe driving and pleasure driving are certainly compatible if pleasure driving does not mean driving without concentration because you are indulging in other pleasures with your thoughts, but if pleasure driving means that I am on the road without time pressure.
Exactly. And the riding experience and the experience of nature don't necessarily have to be a contradiction in terms. You can definitely enjoy both.
Absolutely.
Now, there are also special driver safety training courses on the Großglockner, which the UAMTC also organizes in cooperation with GroHag. Would you like to tell us a bit about this? What are the special features of mountain safety driver training?
Basically, the training is aimed at motorcyclists, and we know, of course, that mountain roads are particularly fascinating for motorcyclists, and of course also for female motorcyclists. But they also require appropriate practice, which you might not have in normal road traffic. If you are on the road on a motorcycle, but yet you have other challenges in the highway area or in urban areas, riding uphill on a motorcycle is physical work, and you shouldn't underestimate that. The issue of, I have to ride actively, is even more important here. I have to actively brake for every bend. I have to actively lean into the bend. I have to be alert with my vision, look where I want to go, and then mentally initiate the next bend maneuver, so to speak. So that's a lot of physical and mental work that I have to do in order to ride my motorcycle safely on the mountain, and we offer as OAMTC riding safety training, which we can organize in cooperation with GroHag, so that we can also use the road here at times when it is not open to public traffic. Of course, that's what makes it so special, because here I can really train the right uphill and downhill driving techniques and cornering techniques with the participants, and our instructors are of course always enthusiastic, because working on the Grossglockner High Alpine Road has a special appeal. It's definitely a nice place to work, with a view.
Exactly. As a little anecdote, I recently registered a new car and was kindly given a voucher by my car insurance company. I haven't redeemed it yet because it wasn't that long ago, but I'm sure I will. It won't be at the Grossglockner, but a normal driver safety training course. What can I expect there?
So basically, it is very pleasing that insurance companies are cooperating with us here and attaching importance to the topic of driving safety, also in the form of vouchers that are intended to encourage people to complete the training courses.
It's not entirely altruistic, probably, on the part of the insurance company, because if I drive safely, I save myself damage, right?
Of course, exactly. No. Insurance companies are now focusing on minimizing claims rates. And in the area of car insurance, this naturally includes having safe customers as drivers. What can you expect from a driver safety training course at one of the OAMTC's 8 driving technique centers? Basically, a day full of experiences where you learn a lot about the technology of the vehicle, and not the classic vehicle technology, but the dynamics. What does driving dynamics mean? What does understeer mean? What does oversteer mean? How does it happen? How do I recognize it? How can I counteract it? What does friction mean? What is static friction? What is dress friction? How does a vehicle behave when it hits a different surface with only one side, so with two wheels? Situations that you encounter again and again in winter, for example, when a road is partly cleared and partly covered with snow drifts and so on. So lots of very practical exercises, and the most important thing is that you spend most of the day in your vehicle. You drive, you are in radio contact with our instructor, and these experts give you practical instructions, and they are trained to only tell you as much as you can process and implement in the situation. After all, it's no use spending half a day in the classroom telling you what to do. No one can put that into practice. It's really about practicing the exercises in small steps on your own vehicle and experiencing for yourself, in the truest sense of the word, what the difference feels like and how a feeling of confidence develops.
That's great. These are topics that you naturally touch on when you get your driver's license as a novice, but certainly not in a practical sense, because you weren't in a safety center. And above all, like me, it's been a bit longer than a year since I made my license. So it will probably do everyone a lot of good to refresh their memory a bit, so to speak, and to experience it again.
So you didn't tell me your age, but I can roughly estimate it, because 20 years ago in Austria, there was a module in driver's license training that you have to complete one day of driver safety training after obtaining your license. This is known as multi-phase training. This means that obtaining a driver's license is not completed when the license is issued, but there are still the phases with perfection driving in the driving school, which give you feedback after a few months of driving practice on what you have implemented and how you are now on the road. And there is also the one day at a driving technique center where you do a driving safety training course. This is a very important measure to ensure that young novice drivers also experience what I have just said. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't do this kind of training again and again later on, especially when they buy a new vehicle, for example. In most cases, these are vehicles with more horsepower or kW, or vehicles with more modern driver assistance systems. And driver assistance systems in particular only help if I have actually experienced them in action. And you shouldn't try out an emergency brake assist or a distance control system in real traffic for the first time, but the driving technology sectors are of course very suitable for this.
Does it make a difference because the new car I have registered is an electric vehicle? Does it make a difference in the training, in the safety training, whether you are driving a conventional combustion engine or an electric vehicle?
Electric vehicles have different driving dynamics, and we have special training courses for electric vehicles. But even if there are 2 or 3 electric vehicles in a normal course setting of 8 or 10 participants, our instructors can deal with them specifically. We also have electric vehicles in our own fleet. This means that if a course participant who does not yet drive an electric vehicle is interested in trying one out and experiencing it, they can do so as part of the training. In other words, we are really trying to train these new or alternative drive concepts. And the real difference lies primarily in the acceleration and the torque that the electric vehicle has. It simply has a completely different pull from the inside out, one would say. And on the other hand, recuperation, which offers completely new possibilities, particularly in terms of driving dynamics, but especially in terms of driving economy, of course.
That's right, I can definitely confirm that. We've now moved on to electromobility, which also brings us a bit into the future. What would you say constitutes modern mobility? What is the future of mobility?
For me, modern mobility is of course characterized by the fact that it has the idea of sustainability at the forefront. In other words, that I can consciously decide which form of mobility is not necessarily the most convenient for me in a given situation, but the most sensible. And for me, sensible always means a combination of economy, but increasingly also ecology, and of course, certain convenience and aspects that should not be left out of the equation. But the future of mobility means that I have several options. It starts with active mobility, which includes walking. Walking is part of it, cycling is part of it, a wide variety of micro devices are part of it, scooters, whether with or without drive, although I always emphasize that the scooter, which is often so hyped, is not the panacea for our urban mobility problems because, in contrast, it is anything but an inclusive means of transport, because for many people it is basically out of the question to move around with a scooter at all. This is an aspect that is often forgotten in the discussion, but on the other hand, inclusion in the sense of comprehensive sustainability is also an important element. So when you talk about sustainable mobility, then of course ecology, so that means avoiding emissions, comes first, but it also includes inclusion, and it also includes social compatibility. That means, can broad sections of the population afford these different forms of mobility?
From an ecological point of view, there is also something like the Green Deal that needs to be achieved. We will see where it really goes and how it is achieved, probably partly with e-mobility and, as you said earlier, these modern vehicles already have numerous safety and assistance aids built in, which of course makes driving safety easier, but they are also already moving towards autonomous driving in some cases. In other words, when the time comes, you could argue that I will no longer need driver safety training, but my car will need it if it drives me itself. But that's probably not really the case. What do you think?
On the subject of autonomous driving or fully automated driving, which would actually be the more correct technical term, there is a lot of wishful thinking, a lot of visions, some myths, but also some fears that have just as little basis. I think we can demystify the whole thing a little. With all the driver assistance systems that modern vehicles are now gradually getting, we are on a path towards automated driving. And in some areas, this will reach a higher level, certainly on the highway. Why? Because I only drive in one direction on the highway. I have no oncoming traffic, with the exception of roadworks. I have no cross traffic, which is very important. And I also have no other forms of traffic, such as pedestrians or cyclists on the carriageway. But even with this restriction, you can see that all of this is based on standard conditions, not the situation where someone breaks down on the highway and the driver or perhaps even all passengers leave the vehicle. Then again, how does an automated vehicle recognize and react to such a situation? Thanks to advancing artificial intelligence and computer performance and sensor technology, it will of course be possible to master this safely. So we are moving towards high automation. We are talking about level 4, so that means where the vehicle is really already driving completely autonomously, but the driver still has the opportunity to intervene. In other words, there is still a handlebar, there is still a pedal set. At level 5, this would no longer be the case at all. So that would really be completely automated, but let's say level 4 on the highway is certainly conceivable and certainly achievable in the foreseeable future. There are already pilots for this. The situation is completely different with automation in urban areas, for example, but also in open country, where I have completely different situations and a lot of unpredictable situations. And there are many more road users who don't have these sensors. And of course, they tend to be at a disadvantage compared to the vehicle, which can even see around corners or through a wall of fog, for example, which I can't do with my human senses. And that makes things much, much, much more difficult. And I think when we get to a well-developed level 2 there, or maybe it should be level 3. In other words, I have certain lane departure warning functions or something like that, or crossing assistance, then that will probably be the state that is achievable.
In other words, it will definitely be a while before you can really read the newspaper or write an email in the car at any time, as a driver, so to speak.
So, as a driver, you should never do it at all. So if I'm sitting in what is now the driver's seat and reading the newspaper or writing an email, then I have to be in a level 5 vehicle, and then I'm no longer the driver, I'm just a passenger in that seat, because then I'm no longer able to intervene in the driving process. But if you basically want to look back quickly and over long distances while reading the newspaper or working on an email, then there is always the option of taking the train, for example.
You have already mentioned that breakdowns can, of course, also be a challenge for autonomous driving. Breakdown assistance is now a central task of the OAMTC, or a core area of its activities. Will modern mobility or e-mobility change anything for you as a service provider in this area?
Well, of course, we see changes for us as a service provider. With electric vehicles, there is no longer the classic symptom of a flat battery. If an electric car has an empty battery, then we are normally talking about the traction battery, the large accumulator that powers the car. We also have solutions for these cases. We are already working on mobile charging solutions so that we can, for example, supply an electric vehicle on the highway with a certain basic charge so that it can at least drive to the next charging station. However, we have many other charging situations that are no different for electric vehicles than for classic combustion engines. That's everything around the chassis, everything around the tires, of course, everything around the lighting systems, windshields, windshield wipers. There are so many banners or reasons why I can't or don't want to continue driving a vehicle to a large extent. These are not dependent on the drive system. Battery electric vehicles are similar to combustion vehicles.
But now, I would still like to venture a small look into the future, and perhaps you would also like to reveal what you think the OAMTC's tasks will be in 10 to 20 years' time.
The tasks of the OAMTC will continue to be to enable safe mobility, because that is what people fundamentally want. They want to be mobile, and they also want to be safe or have the confidence that they will be helped if they find themselves in an unpleasant or emergency situation. In other words, our mission will definitely remain the same. The means we have to use to fulfill this mission will certainly change. On the one hand, these are technical capabilities and new drive technologies, but on the other hand, of course, these are also new digital offerings that will enable us and our members in the future, for example, to interlink and combine different forms of mobility well for themselves or, of course, for UAMTC to support them in active mobility. We already have breakdown assistance for cyclists. We have e-bike services at our bases. So everything to do with bicycles is already available at OAMTC.
Very good. What does the abbreviation OAMTC actually stand for?
So the abbreviation UAMTC stands for an association that has achieved real social significance in Austria with 2.4 million members and enjoys the trust of many, many people in the country. That it stands for Automobile, Motorcycle and Touring Club from its history from the 50s, 40s, 50s of the last century. We want to hold on to that because we are concerned with the content and not the name.
And by the way, the OAMTC also has a podcast called Was uns bewegt, What Moves Us, which is also published very regularly and can be recommended to our listeners.
Exactly. We also started a few months ago with the OAMTC podcast What Moves Us, where we discuss current topics, either with our own experts or with external experts, and hopefully many of our members, but of course also non-members, will listen to these podcast episodes more and more in their cars. We know that listening to podcasts in the car is now very popular, and we are naturally delighted about that.
To perhaps conclude the future outlook on mobility, who or what do you think will be traveling on the Grossglockner High Alpine Road in 20 years' time?
In 20 years' time, however, there will certainly be a lot of cyclists on the Grossglockner High Alpine Road. The proportion of e-bikes will be close to 100%, apart from a few hardcore athletes who will still only ride up with pure muscle power. That's one of my predictions. But I'm also very convinced that motorized two-wheelers will still be riding the Grossglockner High Alpine Road in 20 years' time, because it is quite simply an expression of joie de vivre, freedom, and even if you are on a motorized two-wheeler, it is an experience of nature at the end of the day. So this group will also continue to exist, and of course I'm just thinking of the example of inclusion, who can't cycle or ride a motorcycle, and these people also want to visit the Grossglockner High Alpine Road. This means that cars will also continue to drive along the Grossglockner High Alpine Road, more and more with electric drives. I think that's also clear, and there will certainly be the right infrastructure for this.
Yes, very nice. Finally, I have a few personal questions. What does engineer Oliver Schmierwald do when he's not in the office and not working on mobility? In other words, what are his hobbies?
Well, when I enjoy my free time, I try to be very active, either cycling, which is a great passion of mine, both on the road and off road, although I'm not an ultimate downhill racer. I'm more of a pleasure cyclist who is happy to enjoying nature on the bike. I play golf from time to time. I also like to go hiking, of course, and play tennis. So anything that involves active outdoor exercise is very important to me. In the colder or darker months of the year, I also like to sit at home with a good book or a good group of friends and enjoy culture from time to time.
Is traveling also an issue?
Travel is part of my job because I also work for the UAMTC in a number of international roles. Now, I do have a relatively high level of travel activity due to my job, so I prefer to enjoy not having to travel in my free time. And when I do, I like to go sailing in Croatia.
Ah, yes. That would have been my next question. Are there any places you've been that you'd still like to visit? Or where you've already been and would like to go again?
Unfortunately or thankfully, depending on how you want to look at it, there are still a lot of places in the world that I haven't been to. I've been all over Europe myself. I haven't really traveled all over the North Scandinavia except for the capital cities. But the landscape experience of the far north is still missing from my collection. Unfortunately, I've only been to Africa very sporadically. And the continent is, of course, incredibly exciting and interesting. For me personally, it's more exciting than parts of Asia, for example. So if I had the choice, I would definitely travel to an African country rather than an Asian one. But that's just my personal preference. And places that I love to go to again and again are definitely beautiful European cities like London and Paris. I simply love being there.
We said before that podcasts are often listened to in the car. I agree, it's the same for me, but not only. Every now and then I like to listen to music, especially on longer journeys. What is on your playlist when you listen to music in the car?
Oh God, I'm terribly monotonous when it comes to music. Well, if it's pop music, then I still have a favorite artist that I can listen to over and over again. That's Robbie Williams. It's simply still my favorite. But I still like listening to Austropop from the 80s and 90s. There are a lot of memories from my youth associated with it, I'm happy to admit that. But I also like to listen to classical music again and again, or more and more, because it simply offers a different form of relaxation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
This was a new episode of Glockner Gipfel, the podcast of Grossglockner Hochalpenstraßen AG. We would be delighted if you enjoyed it and would like to leave us a positive review on the podcast platforms or recommend the Glockner Gipfel to others. For more information, please visit our website at grossglockner.at or send us an email at info@grossglockner.at. Thank you for listening and see you next time.
This podcast was recorded in German language and then transformed to English with the help of artificial intelligence.